Welcome to the Voice of the Force podcast for The Batch. We're back for the final season. But I'm not alone. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed.
Hello, hello.
And Noma.
Good soldiers follow orders.
Except in these episodes. And with that said, Ed, what episodes are we covering today?
Well, today we are covering the third season of The Bad Batch. It just came out earlier this week. And they released three episodes. So we're going over season three, episode one, Confined, season three, episode two, Paths Unknown, and season three, episode three, Shadows of Tantus. We're going to talk about what happened, our thoughts on what may happen for the rest of the season, and if we spotted any Easter eggs, how many did we see, what were they, what did they relate to, and we give you some detail about that. If there's something we miss or you think something that was really interesting and you want to hear somebody talk about it, please get in contact with us. There's many ways to do so. And if you miss anything right now, if you're not, we will repeat these at the end of the episode as well as put them in the show notes for you.
Absolutely. So yeah, as always, one of the easiest ways to find us is over at our website, and that is voiceoftheforce.com. We've also got our email, which is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. On social media, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. The handle for all of those is @voiceforcepod. As always, listening, retweeting, and reposting our new episode tweets does help with growing our listener base and is very much appreciated. You can listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Reviewing us with 5 stars and a comment helps with visibility, and you could subscribe for free for the latest episode as soon as it releases. And as always, we also plug our Twitch at the end of these. That is twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming. We are live 3 times a week, barring any, you know, cancellations or things that pop up. So Tuesdays at 10 p.m. EST, it is myself and a VTuber friend of mine, Roomba friend. We are currently doing Elden Ring co-op. So if you want to join in and watch that suffering, we're going to try and beat the game before Shadows of the Erdtree Tree. So that is the main goal. I'm excited to see if we can do it. I think we can, honestly. But it's going to take a pile of our own dead bodies in order to get there.
How many dead bodies so far, Noma?
Oh, I don't even know at this point.
Who's died more?
Probably Roomba, but not by that much.
Damn, honestly. It's that hard, eh?
Also, you're muted.
It's that hard?
So the co-op mod makes it tougher. It doubles all the bosses' health because there's two of us.
Yeah.
So that is a big hurdle. And then some stuff happened in Raya Lucaria, and you can watch the video. I don't want to talk about it. I might have died a bunch of embarrassing deaths. I've never died to a marionette.
It's the Souls franchise.
I might have died a couple of times.
Yeah.
My favorite death of all so far in Raya Lucaria is there's an area where there's this big like a gear thing that's pulling all these pedestals up and down, and I went to jump, and I know how to gauge that jump, and I just missed it completely and just fell to my death and died. If you know Raya Lucaria, it's the area where if you take the other side down all the way to the bottom, the Iron Virgins are down there.
Yeah, okay.
Pull you to Volcano Manor.
Jeez.
But yeah, so it's been fun. But tune in if you want to see two veteran adventurers go through that. And other than that, on Fridays, I do a Star Wars Arma. Arma is a military simulation game. So I do a Star Wars version of that with the 91st Mobile Reconnaissance Force. So if you tune in on Fridays, 6 p.m. EST, you can watch me in the tank division blowing up AATs and having a fun time as long as I don't get blown up in return. But yeah, it's all interesting. We're starting a new campaign soon, so that'll be neat. I've heard that it's going to be suffering, so that's also good. You know, it's a lot less boring than just kind of going around and doing whatever. And then Saturdays are our most popular days. We have literally, as of recording this, just started a new game because we've beaten Star Wars Empire at War, Thrawn's Revenge. We've moved on to Mount and Blade 2 Bannerlord. It's definitely still Star Wars related because, you know, our main character is an isekai'd young Candorous Ordo who ended up from the Old Republic into a fantasy world. And yeah, I found a really cool banner for the Mythosaur Mandalorian skull. So we're doing that. We'll play until either people get bored, because I definitely know it's a game that is a lot of fun to play, but watching can be up in the air. The big battles and sieges are awesome, but once you see them for the 150th time, you know, it starts to lose a bit of its luster. But either way, we're excited to bring you guys that, have a bunch of good, fun conversations. You know, it's a safe place. It's always open for anybody. So if you're interested in watching our Saturday streams, they are at 3 p.m. EST. But yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. And before we get into the episodes, we're going to get into the spoiler warning, which is if you've not seen these episodes, we recommend you stop the podcast here and go watch the episodes first, then come back and watch and listen to this podcast. So then you aren't spoiled on everything that is going to happen, because we're going to go over synopsis for all three episodes and then talk in depth about the things that happen in them, what it means for what Ed said before, just everything else that's to come potentially. So yeah, pause here. Go watch it and come back, and then we'll still be here. And with that said, let's get into the credits.
Shuttle 135 to 10 to space. Do you copy?
Affirmative 135. What is your status?
On final approach, but visibility is limited.
You're cleared for landing. Stay on course.
Absolutely. So I'm just going to go through all three episodes' credits at the top. So for episode one, Confined, the writer is Jennifer Corbett and the director is Saul Ruiz. For episode two, Paths Unknown, the writer is Matt Michenovitz and the director is Nate Villanueva. And for episode three, Shadows of Tantis, the writer is again Matt Michenovitz. And the director is Stuart Lee. If I've mispronounced anybody's names, I do apologize for that. But yeah, without any further ado, really starts off, it's a very slow episode, but it's that way on purpose. So we're picking up from Omega being captured at the end of season two, and is now part of the Imperial cloning division on Tantis. I think when we first, we literally pick up, I think, from her first day there after the plot, or not really plot twist, but plot reveal that, oh, come on, I watched this episode today. What was her name? Emery is her sister, or, you know, a fellow female clone. So we get, it's a lot of stuff happens. It's a very methodical shot just showing how she's basically a prisoner at this facility and going through the same motions every single day. Those motions are her going with Emery to take blood from clones for a, as of so far, unknown reason. It will be revealed. And then Emery taking some of Omega's blood. She brings the blood to Nalase to study. Nalase always destroys Omega's blood and then tests it. And then Omega goes and feeds these animals that are called Lurka hounds. I almost had a conniption at first because I almost thought it was Loth.
I thought it was Lurker.
Not again.
I thought it was their accent. I was talking to Ed about this. I thought it was their accent saying Lurka, like lurker, because they kind of lurk in the darkness.
Yeah.
So I was like, aptly named, but it's Lurka. And I'm like, oh, something different. And there we go.
Yeah, they're used as base defense. We see at the legitimately at the very beginning of the episode the quote reason why it's base defense, which is that a TK Mu shuttle goes and crash lands, and because they're TKs, they don't stay in the shuttle, even though we're told right after they leave it that it's very dangerous in the wild. The wildlife outside is very dangerous, but having the intelligence of TK troopers, that means they all leave immediately and get killed by something. And that something is the reason why they keep the Lurka hounds around to basically dissuade those whatevers from attacking. So the other thing that she does on a fairly regular basis is sneaks down to try and talk to Crosshair, who is basically, he's very sanity broken, mind broken, as it were, and just is like, nah, just leave me here. We're never going to escape. Just accept your fate. And of course, Omega's like, no, I refuse. Honestly, the main thing that really just happens in the first episode is, A, we see how long, because there's a huge time jump, because it goes from her first day to day 14 to month 5. And so that's a giant, because it goes from day 14 to 150. And then I think
you see it on the wall, right? That's how we can indicate it. Yeah.
So I just did a really quick math to be like, oh my God. Yeah. 6 times 5, man. Sorry. 6 rows of 5 or 6 things of like 5 and then 5 rows down. So altogether. And then it even goes farther than that. I think at the end, she's on day 164. That ending being that one of the Lurka hounds, she's named Batcher. And it's like, it looks like it's supposed to be the runt of like the Lurka hounds. It gets injured one day. And so she heals it with like a back to medical something and learns from a, I don't know what kind of droid they are, but they look like they're based off the Republic security, the new Republic security droids in Mandalorian. But it's some sort of like sentry security droid. But she learns from it that it's going to be terminated because it was injured. So instead, Omega kills the droid, which was kind of surprising, and lets Batcher go. However, that draws the attention of Dr. Hemlock, who has a whole like, if you nurture something, then you've made it weak. And so it's going to go out there and get killed because you care about it. Kind of like generic super evil villain speech. And we get a little confrontation where Omega basically tells Hemlock that she knows that Hemlock can't hurt her because that will make Nalasea not want to work with Hemlock. And then Hemlock reveals, yeah, that's true, but I can hurt Crosshair and then you'll fall in line. And so we're left on that, like, I guess revelation that Hemlock's a 2D villain. You know, he doesn't really have a third dimension. He's evil and he wants to be the head of the science committee. And that's about as deep as his character goes, I guess.
We do have a little bit of information on that droid that you're talking about. I think you're right in the aspect of like, what is this droid in terms of its abilities and stuff, or like what it's used for. It's called a K-9X1 or a K-9 droid. So it's probably specifically used for like taming hounds or something, but it's definitely got the same like K-2SO sort of designation.
And I was gonna say either that or it's the later version of the K-2.
Yeah, and I don't know, I guess it would it be later or earlier?
Well, you assume numerically, right? K-2, K-9.
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't necessarily mean it had to come way later, right? You could pump out a whole bunch of different variations.
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting though.
It literally looks like the Republic droids except for the head. Like that's the only difference.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's an interesting first episode. I don't really have a lot to say about it. I was shocked when it was a 5-month gap. I was like, man, what are the Bad Batch doing? Like, they left her there for almost half a year.
That's crazy. Is. That's the problem.
Yeah, and as we see in the next episode, it is explained, so it's fine.
Yeah. Like, well, they knew at the end of the last season that they didn't know where she went.
Right, but yeah. I mean, how the Bad Batch usually goes is they figure out next episode, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And, you know,
they couldn't
here too, kinda.
It shows you how good he is at keeping information secret, I guess.
kinda, as we'll see.
Yeah.
It's neat. The one thing I do want to get the you guys' opinions on this, but the one thing that I did find was really interesting is that all of the color outside of the lights is drained in this episode. It's a lot
supposed to be like ambient. It's like what's it called? The Solitary Clone in season 2, where it was like the same idea, kind of episode day to day with Crosshair. And that was kind of the same vibe, music. It's got that same tone. But yeah, you're right. I didn't even notice that was why it felt that way. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It's more reinforced in this episode because in the Solitary Clone, we at least, you know, there's light in certain other areas. It's less noticeable because you're surrounded by snow, basically.
That makes sense.
The whole time, right? So your mind just goes, yeah, snow. But in this one, it's just devoid of life and color. And I noticed because, like, Emery and Omega are quite tan. Well, most of the clones are, right? And so but they're so pale in this one. But it's not pale in like skin tone. It's pale in just like saturation.
Yeah.
But it works really well. It really gets the bleak and kind of just like depressing and crushing atmosphere across.
You're not a prisoner, Omega. It's like,
It's like, say one thing, do the other. What were you guys' thoughts on this episode?
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, definitely a good way to open it up to give us a timeline of where we're at and what Omega has been dealing with on her side. Realizing that Nala Se has something hidden with Omega's blood sample is very interesting. Like, how does she know that this would happen unless this was something that was planned prior?
That's what they brought her in for. They knew, she knows what Omega's blood has and what they're looking for.
They just wanted Nala Se to actually like do the work, and she was going to do that once Omega was there. So everybody else doesn't know at this point that she has this this blood sample that's going to help. But
they do really heavily hint this episode.
Yeah.
About what it is. Specifically what it is, because there is a moment where
going to the vaults.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They go to the vault.
Yeah.
And he mentions M count how her samples aren't,
doing everything to not say midichlorians.
There was clone that had like a reduced M count in whatever process they're doing. It took a little bit, but it reduced the M count by quite a substantial amount. They're like, we need to have it at least the same or higher if possible.
Yeah, and so it's almost too heavily foreshadowing, because like you can put together right now, say it's destroying the samples, the M count's not high enough by a process of A to B, that means C, and we get that confirmed later on. But
I think it's interesting that they're setting that up.
It is. I'm curious. It really depends what they're gonna do with it. They've only really seemed to do one thing with it so far, and it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
We
kind of know what it goes into, though, with Mando, right? Like, that's basically where this is going. And then eventually into the sequel trilogy.
Right, and so I'm curious.
That's where it ends, right? At least that's where we think it ends. Yeah.
Well, that's the culmination, is, like, what happens with Omega is going to be the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because she's, like, the main protagonist of a kid's show. Kid's show?
At this point, yeah.
I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
It's kid's show. Yeah.
Kid's show. No, by episode 3, it's pretty kid's show.
Oh, true. But yeah, Ed, how about you, man?
No, I enjoyed the episode for what it was as an opener to the season. It was good. The change they show over time, like you were saying with the scratches on the wall, the change in Omega's hair. Just Emery, I'm not sure about her and the device she has around her head. If that's like
goggles?
Dampening, yeah. If that's like dampening her emotions, something, because she seems so flat and so dead inside almost.
She's been beaten down by these people.
Yeah, like,
or by what happened before or whatever.
She was with them since she was a kid, right? So it's just like, I would say like, is it something where like they've just, like you said, like beaten it out of her, or it's just like just reduced her to almost droid like in stature and everything. So it's like, what's the deal going on there? And that's what I want to know more of with her as well.
Right.
Because they show us Omega for 2 seasons, like, you have a sister. But, not what you probably... I'm thinking it's going along the ways of, like, it's not what you expect.
There was also one, and it's a small thing, but there was one thing that kind of bugged me, which is that it feels like every single clone commando in the galaxy works at Mount Tantiss now.
Yeah.
Like, having 3 squads was a big event in Legends. Having 2 squads was enough for ARC troopers to be like, what the hell's going on? And there's a couple shots where they have like 24. And it's like, what's happening?
I think the main thing, too, is like, this is like Hemlock's Death Trooper Guard. Like, this is what, they're introduced more in, Bad Batch than they ever really were in canon, sorry, not Legends. And so once we get it's like they're the guard at Tantiss. It's like, okay, we don't get to know anything really else about them except for a little bit in the Clone Wars with Omega Delta Squad. We see them in the background.
30 seconds.
Yeah. And so it'll be interesting to see if we see the other members of Delta Squad or if they're dead or what. Because we only see Scorcher in this episode. And then other commandos that are on
was never
unnamed.
Gonna be there.
Sorry? No, 100%. Severbeld.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way.
That would be so sad. if he did have any sort of connection to this stuff. That'd be so sad.
I'd imagine probably like because they had a Tech as well, so it would have been really funny.
What was his name?
Tech.
Was it actually Tech?
Yeah, so it's like they probably just didn't want to have both to confuse people at that point. Or
Boss,
maybe
Scorch, Tech. Sev, and Tech?
Fixer, sorry.
Fixer that's was the his one. Name.
It's just like they might turn Tech into Fixer, unless he really is gone.
Which, I don't believe it.
Which, it, what would he be doing for this long, unless he couldn't get off of Iriadu? But like, it, like you said, it's been damn near 5 months. You know, Crosshair looks like... like Crosshair is stuck in there, Omega's there. We don't know what's going on with Hunter or Wrecker yet. Echo's already gone off with Rex, so like that team has really been decimated.
There's only two of them left. Seasons.
Two of them together in each spot.
Yeah, which is not many. I don't know. I think it definitely gives you like this episode definitely leads into the next two, and I'm glad that they gave us all three at once. It sets the tone for how Omega is dealing with all the stuff that she needs to, like making the little Lula doll out of straw instead of having the little like soft one that she had. I thought that was kind of nice, just a kind of little nod to her still trying to keep her sanity in this prison, for lack of a better term.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other last points before we get into the next one? All
right. It made me want. I'm glad they released the three of them right away, because this one, as it was just like, you've given us a little info dump on what's going on here.
Right.
Yeah.
You didn't show us anything to do with the rest of the main characters. So, like, that's kind of. I thought they were going to give us at least 5-10 minutes of what, you know, Hunter and Wrecker were doing, but nothing.
Yeah. I'd have been very annoyed if they just had this episode, because then the, like, what are the Bad Batch up to would have been forefront of like, well, you left her for 5 months.
Yeah.
What's up? But yeah, because it's three episodes, that part gets washed away because it's not that big a deal. So from there, we go to episode two, Synopsis, which is an interesting... Sorry, that is not the... I read that like it was the name of the episode.
Yeah, I just saw
Paths Unknown, which is much more on par. So this one, I thought it was... for a half second when this one started, I was like, is that the Screaming Citadel? Because we see this like giant mountain spire mansion thing. And we basically get a very, very quick overview of... I am very curious if it was a coincidence or an homage, because we start with it's like a Deveronian crime syndicate, and it starts with a Clancy Brown sounding Deveronian who is like yelling at like the syndicate queen for being weak and having failed this insurrection, and she like drops him down a pit. Basically, he's standing on a ray shield, she deactivates it, he falls, and I was like, is that Clancy Brown's character Mandalorian, or is that just a guy? And I don't know. So that would be interesting, because he has a mask. So
I can see if there's
a
name for the character.
I don't know what his skin color is.
It might be in the credits of the episode. I'll take a look.
It would be really neat if it was, but like I thought that, and he falls down the pit, and I was like, well, at this point, don't matter. Basically, after he falls, we get Hunter and Wrecker coming in, and they're dragging a pike with them, and it turns out that this pike is the one who... it looked like it was like the syndicate leader's majordomo, but it turns out it's her son.
Doesn't have a name.
Well, maybe both.
His name is Deveronian Captain, and he's voiced by Liam O'Brien.
Oh, I thought it was Clancy Brown.
In so, modulation. Yeah, maybe
just
random. Yeah. He also played the pike guy that he brought in. Oh, or that the Bad Batch brought in.
Yeah. So they bring that pike guy in, and it turns out that he's the one who, they say, embarrassed and humiliated your son, and then tossed the son his horn because he's missing one horn. And it turns out it's a agreement where they bring this pike to be tortured, but he gets dragged away, so we don't see that. And in exchange, they're given info on Dr. Hemlock's facilities, and they say that they have heard that the Durand crime family, these Deveronians, know the whereabouts of it. So the son gives them this little info puck, and basically says like, yeah, you know, the Empire is hiding it, like as best as they can, but here's the lead that we have. Hunter asks if it's verified. He doesn't get an answer, so they head off to go and see if it's true. Wrecker points out that Echo and Rex said that they'd be able to meet up with them in two cycles. Hunter says no, she's been gone for way too long. We're not waiting. So they go to this planet, and I had a feeling, because as they like fly towards it, it is also a jungle planet, and they land, and then as soon as I started walking through it, I was like, it's not the planet, because it felt like it was setting up for a red herring pull. And it turns out, yes, they run into clones, but they're clone cadets, and it's, I think their names are Zeke and Stack.
And Mox.
We don't meet him yet, though.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
Yeah, so we meet them, and they're armed with, like, pointed sticks, basically. Once they realize that the Bad Batch are also clones, they basically say, okay, come and talk to our leader, and don't touch the vines. Which got me annoyed, where it's one of those story tropes where they don't give them all the information properly, because then it's more of an interesting reveal. But, like, the reason that something happens then is that, I don't know if it's Zeke or Stack, but one of them, like, brushes past a vine, and so Wrecker sees that, and it's like, I guess I can brush past it too, so he brushes past it, and then he brushes past the actual thing that they were telling them not to touch.
Yeah.
Which turns out, at the moment, later on I started being like, what the hell? But they're called Slither Vines, and I guess the Empire bioengineered these, like, living like, monster vine things. Mm-hmm. Right? Kind of, except they're not the dark side, and then later on they start turning into a different sci-fi alien.
Well, they also turn into, like, a different alien that we already know in Star Wars, a little bit.
Oh, yeah, at the end. Well, even then I was like, this looks, well, I'll talk about it when we get there, but shooting it doesn't really do anything. Cutting it does seem to, and the clone cadets point out that they're poisonous too, on top of everything else. So they take them to go meet with Mox. He's the oldest clone cadet that survived. He just relays that the base, which they also found and was like completely orbital bombarded, Hemlock used to work there with them being captives and a bunch of other clones. And then at one point, it turned out that, like, something happened, and they moved labs, and when that happened, the cadets ran, and so they got to escape the orbital bombardment because they were outside the area. So
that's very sad.
It is. There's definitely more cadets there. Yeah, right. And again, they just, like, the Bad Batch is very much this season just brushing over all the darkness, and just not focusing on it at all. But I do appreciate that there's at least, like, hints of it being there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, basically, Hunter's like, well, we need to go in there and see if there's any information on Omega. They're told that there's a single terminal that still is on, but doesn't have power. So they go back to their ship, grab Gonki, so he's actually plot relevant again, and then head out with, I don't know if it's Zeke or Stack. I'm assuming it's Zeke. I think it's Zeke, because I think Stack can pilot things, which is relevant later. So they go through the facility. It's very kind of like, ooh, kind of spooky horror. And then they get jumped by Slither Vines, and I mean, it's the Flood. It looks like they get attacked by the Flood. if we want to, like, really push it, it's like the Combine aliens from Half-Life 2. It kind of looks like a head crab. Like, it looks like a head crab and a Flood parasite did the fusion dance. But yeah, and so at that point I'm like, what are we gonna talk about this? Are we not gonna talk about this? And no, they just keep going.
You got no time for this stuff.
I guess, right? So they as they're reaching the area, of course we've got to have a B plot. So it's Stack and Stack is basically talking to Mox, and it's like, they came in a ship, let's steal the ship. And Mox is like, no, they're going for one of their own. I respect that. We shouldn't betray them. Stack's like, don't be a bitch. And then, like, okay. And then they just do it, and I was like, oh well, that didn't take long. So they get to the main control panel. There's this, like, big soupy, like, water mix underneath, so you're like, someone's gonna come up from there, because they keep cutting back to the bubbles. I wonder who will be. So they go to the control panel, plug Gonki in, start to get the data onto Hunter's data pad.
To be fair, those bubbles looked really good. Their animation team is killing it. Like, They're doing different things with the environment, and I love how they're doing, like, these small little things that are taking the technology to the next level, and that's one of them.
The really interesting thing with those bubbles was that they are animated in a very unsettling way, and it took until the second time I saw it to realize they're animated like a stop motion.
Oh, interesting.
And so that's why the bubbles coming up and popping doesn't look natural. It's because there's too few frames.
Okay.
But it's on purpose.
Yeah, that's cool.
Then why else would everything else not have enough frames? So yeah, it's just a neat little way to unsettle people. And I was like, oh, that's cool that you're trying that, assuming I'm right and it wasn't just some weird thing on my end.
Yeah, yeah.
Where my Disney Plus was freezing every time it happened. So hopefully not. But so yeah, then they get attacked by Gravemind. Sorry, they get attacked by a bunch of tentacles that don't speak in Shakespearean triplicate. And it just turns out to be this like giant, not Diogna, not a Drangir, not the Gravemind monster thing. It looks like they're in a sticky situation. You know, they get the data, they try to climb out, but there's nowhere to go. And then Stack and Mox, who have heard Zeke's cries over the comlink, come in the Marauder to save them. They're able to beat the not Drangir by just like dumping all of their grenade ordnance into its mouth and then throwing a thermal detonator in there, and then dipping. And so they've got the information. It's not full. It's like a hint. But
like they basically sector they have, right?
Yeah, they have an entire sector to try and figure out where Tantus is. Then we're given something that at first, and I'll talk about it as soon as I'm done the synopsis, but at first bugged me, which is that the kids are like, oh, what do we do? Where do we go now? And Hunter's like, well, we'll take you to Pabu. Well, he doesn't name it that, but he says, like, we'll take you to this like this island place that is on its own, and you guys can do something there. And even Mox is like, oh, you know, I was always trained to be a soldier. I don't know what to do. And Hunter's like, well, this is your chance to figure it out. And at first that bugged me because I was like, okay, we're going like full kids mode, right? Like it's, oh, you can do this and be free and, you know, you can choose your own path and you shouldn't choose violence. And I was like, well, the whole time, like, Zeke is talking about how he wanted to be a clone trooper and wanted to be, you know, put into that role. So I was like, yeah, this is kind of weak. But I was thinking about it as the next episode was spooling up. And I was like, well, Hunter never wanted Omega to be traveling with them. Yeah. He wanted her to stay on Pabu or with Cid.
And they can't be clone troopers. Anywhere. It just doesn't work. Like, they could be bounty hunters, if anything.
So, in my head, what I thought he was going to say during the episode was, we're going to take you to Rex.
Well, that's where Rex is. Rex is bringing all the clones to Pabu.
Is he? I completely forgot about that.
I'm pretty sure that's what was happening last season. I think. It might be wrong, but I remember them. They wanted a base of operations for that stuff, and I think it was Pabu. I believe. I'll double check that, but I believe that's what it was.
I mean, if that's the case, then yeah, I guess it is just an intersection of both things, but yeah, it was just a thing where it was like, okay, well, if in my head I was telling myself, like, well, if Hunter didn't want that for Omega, why would he then be like, yeah, kids, go on and be clone troopers? So then it makes more sense to, yeah, go to this island nation. You've already got some combat training, help them out with stuff. So, you know, overall, pretty good episode. I mean, the main thing that I liked was that it explains why they hadn't found her in 5 months. They're looking, and is the main thing, but they're down to two people. So it's rough, but, yeah, well, Dan's looking that up. Ed, what were your thoughts on, episode two?
Episode two just made me laugh because all I could think of was Into the Dark.
Fair.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, okay, cool. Like we're going for a bit of the horror. We're going for a bit of the thing, but it also reminded me of Fallen Order with the vines, just because
when you're on those stupid
and
things,
the little things and chasing. So I was like, yeah, the plants are always bad, huh? Right. None, they're all using New Zealand accents, huh? What are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? Death wrong. World Australia?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, wrong Death World Island.
But it gave a nice... The beginning of it especially gave a nice feel to the whole, okay, you know, Hunter and Wrecker have been doing something, so we get our answer from the last episode as to what the hell, where are they and what are they doing and why is it taking you so long before they even make an attempt. That we know, it's just like it'd be suicide just to go there, and we don't even know where there is, which I was like, I thought you did, but okay.
I think I'm on crack because it's not pop. They never did that. Maybe it was a dream I had at one point in my life. I don't know.
I swear I have the same dream too, because I'm like, how does Omega wind up there if they don't go there? They went there to try and free.
They went there to go hang out with what's her face. the adventurer that went.
Yeah, that's right. Hunting. That's right. It was after her, not Horizon Zero Dawn.
And I think the reason why I think it was a conversation they had, because I remember them saying like this place is like off the grid essentially, and so like they have like you can bring clones here and like they will be safe here because nobody knows where we are essentially, right? It's a hidden world that they have.
Well, I'm not talking about Pabu. I'm talking about the facility planet.
Oh, I'm saying Pabu. Sorry.
Oh, Tantus. Yeah.
Yeah, Tantus. Because like she ended up there. You guys were there. We saw the clones and everything like that. Like the commandos and everything. Like, you guys know where she is. Like or was that the place that they leveled? Because I was just like, I could have sworn
that might be the place they leveled, but they would have known that already. So I don't.
That's a good question.
We'll have to rewatch some episodes from season two.
Yeah.
Because in one part, I feel like they were either higher up, more mountainous areas, and like you could see animals flying around and stuff like that. It almost looked like there was a lot of water. Now they just look like they're on Yavin, pretty much.
I think the place where they did that, it's interesting that the plot for Bad Batch is already kind of disparate in our heads. But I think that was the facility that when Rampart was in charge. I think it was his facility.
I think you're right. It was either his or it was the guy that. No, it was his. I think you're right. It was his. That does ring a bell.
I think that's the part where it ends with
the outpost, right?
I'm pretty sure that's the one where it ends with the commander being like, "We have to tell people that the Bad Batch are alive," and then Rampart just like shoots him off the cliff.
Yeah.
So I think it's that's the shipping container one.
We'll have to do a little bit of research.
Yeah, seriously.
Because it's either I'm getting Mandalorian mixed up or I'm getting Bad Batch mixed up. But I
because the episode you're thinking of is the one where it starts with the clone running away and then being stunned. And then that leads them going to that base and hitting Scorch with a bunch of stun blasts. But yeah, I can't remember if that's Tantus or not.
I will have to do a little bit of research while we're recording.
Yeah.
Ed, you're continuing to talk about the second episode there.
Yeah, so that was my biggest question of this whole series. Like, why are they looking for where to go? Don't they know where to go? So, like, I could have looked into it, but by that point, I was still invested in the episode. So I was like, I'll check later. Just did not check later. But overall, too, again, was one of those where I didn't hate it. And because we could see on the other side of what these two were doing, sure, it was just interesting to see a Deveronian female. For a change, we really don't see them at all. So that was cool. And
on that point, episode 13 of season one has a character named Roland Durand, who is the guy that had the horn shaved off these episodes.
Yep.
He's from the first season. I totally forgot about that interaction.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It explains why he was so willing to help them then. Yeah, the thing as well that was neat was female Deveronian with horns, because that was a huge rarity in Legends.
Oh, interesting.
So female Deveronians in Legends, they had horns, some of them, but most of the time it was just these like big black circles instead, and it was a little bit odd. But yeah, that is something that I'm really curious about too, is that we are introduced to a new crime family, a Deveronian-based crime family. That is at odds with the Pike Syndicate. So that tells me they're not part of the Shadow Syndicate. Because, I don't think Maul would let them screw with each other like that. So I'm curious about learning more about this, right? It's always neat when we get a new kind of criminal underbelly that isn't kind of generically rehashed new things.
Especially because they should still be in hiding at this point. Mm-hmm. Because from what I remember from season seven, when Maul is hiding in the sewers when the attack is happening against Mandalore, he's contacting all of them. So Crimson Dawn, the Pikes, everybody, and telling them, okay, lay low because Empire is coming. I don't know when exactly, but it's coming soon. Going to hiding now. And then we see the fruits of that. We're like, years from now, Dryden Vos is going to die. Mm. But that's going to take place a few years from now, I guess. So like they should just be off the map completely. So the fact that they found this Pike guy, it's like, where were you? And you needed commandos to go find him and extricate him.
So it's like, I found that to be really cool.
I've done a little bit of research, quick. The planet that they went to in that episode called Warmantle, season one, is Daro. Different planet.
Okay.
The one that we went to this episode is called Cetron. And Tantus, I gotta find out if that's the planet or if that's the name of just the facility. Yeah.
At the very least, it's the mountain, because they do Wayland. Reference Mount Tantus.
It's called Wayland. The planet.
They're on Wayland? Okay.
Okay.
For that Tantus is. That's where Tantus is. I know it's from Legends, but that's where they are. Yeah.
Wayland is the planet in...
Well, in my authority.
We were playing it in Thrawn's Revenge. It's the planet where the Dark Empire and Palpatine come from.
That makes sense. There you go.
That makes sense.
Cloning program.
No, they come from Biss. Wayland's just Sabaoth.
Oh, yeah, shit. You're right. You're right. My bad.
There you go.
I'm a fake fan.
You played through it, no.
Yeah.
Like, Wayland is where we get Luke from.
That's right. Yeah, Luke.
The one thing I didn't hear you guys say was what this creature reminded you of. Is you said Dianoga, and I guarantee you that's one half of this creature. The other half is a sarlacc. It seems like they tried to make a plant version that is submersible of a sarlacc, because it looked exactly like when it comes out of the ground, it looked like the sarlacc pit when it has all the teeth, right? If you think about what we had in like Book of Boba, it almost looks identical. And I'm like, oh boy.
But didn't you know sarlaccs don't want to eat people, because Jess is uncomfortable for it?
Yeah, they want anything they can eat, I guess. But this
Jabba
thing
kept throwing people in there, and when Lando was falling, it stuck his tongue out to actually stabilize him, not pull him in.
Knowing that they're doing all this research in animals as well, and like creatures, I wouldn't put a pass in to try and make a jungle version of a sarlacc. That's terrifying.
That does at least explain something, because like my question through the whole episode was like, why did you make this? Like, what was the purpose?
Yeah, and it could have been to like possibly science. Put it onto a planet and be like, the Empire is here to rescue you or something.
Maybe, right? But I was too, like, literally, as soon as I saw the little scuttling thing, it was just Halo. My mind just switched to Halo.
It's interesting because it has offspring.
That's a great mind.
It has little offsprings, which look like face huggers, right? So I was like, that's cool. Ned, you're going to say something?
Don't shoot it. Just makes it aggressive. Yeah, okay. What the fuck do you call this right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, what blasters did they have to figure that out?
Yeah, right.
For someone who said don't shoot it, you'll just make it angry, they were pumping a lot of laser fire into it at the end of the episode.
Panic. Panic's a very good motivator. All right, you guys want to get in the last episode here?
Let's do.
Yep. So, episode 3, Shadows of Tantus. So, the episode, I'm pretty sure, starts with Omega's... Lula 2 being found after a surprise inspection, which did have a very minor thing. I was like, wait a minute, but like, it's not something that really bugs me.
It does come back later.
It does, like, right? But no, it was just funny because like, she hides it behind her back, so obviously it gets found. But they don't check under her bed or pillow. They just like open her lunchbox.
Yeah.
No, they just open her lunchbox and then they find it.
Yeah.
It behind her back, and I was like, so she could just hide stuff under her pillow and they'd never find it in surprise inspection. Because they did not even check. But anyways, Emery basically takes her down to get the, keep doing the process and all that other stuff. But then, they have a little bit of a nice moment together. So when she comes back, she's giving her back. No, I think it is episode 1, because I'm pretty sure the episode ends with her getting Lula back. Or I'm going crazy. But... when they go down for one of these days, Hemlock and Nala Se come in, and Hemlock says, oh, someone very important's coming. So Nala Se is going to be with me the entire time. So Emery, you do her job. And at that, because Nala Se is literally watching Emery take Omega's blood, she's like, no, I can do it. And Hemlock goes, no, it's fine. Emery knows what she's doing. So Nala Se goes to check on something. But while she's doing that, she has a very loud whisper conversation with Omega. About how she needs to get out, because if they look at her blood, she's going to be in danger. And so she is Omega's basically told, take my data pad, use it to take a shuttle and get out of here by Nala Se. And then she leaves, and Emery goes to deal with samples. Omega follows, and then through some stuff manages to take the data pad and immediately goes to try and find Crosshair. I actually thought it was an amazingly hilarious scene where Omega basically tells Crosshair, like, I'll get the guard's attention. And Crosshair, without missing a beat, basically finds one of the guards and is like, guard, let me out. And he's like, what? He's like, yeah, open the door. I want to leave. And the TK is like, clone thinks he's better than us, or he ranks higher than us. And Crosshair's like, I'll take your gun, too. And the TK is like, how are you going to do that? And Omega opens the door. And, yeah, Crosshair immediately takes both guys out. We get the classic scene where the TK that wasn't immediately grabbed by Crosshair tries to stun him, and Crosshair just holds the other guy up, and he just absorbs, like, three stun rounds, and then he throws him away.
Basically what Wrecker does. I love it.
Yeah, back on the Acclimator, right? But, so they completely wing their escape. There was one thing that really did actually bug me this episode, because but we'll talk about it later, but it basically, they get through the facility. Omega's plan is for them to use the kennels.
Before that, you forgot about the one plan. Take Emperor Palpatine's shuttle. God, yes, please, let's pull Lando Calrissian right now.
And so that part I actually did really appreciate, because Omega's like, oh, Nalase said to take a shuttle. The only one that's not locked down is Palpatine's. And Crosshair's like, no.
Not a smart idea.
It's going to be too guarded. There's going to be too many of us. Find a different path. So yeah, Omega then says, what about the kennels? Because Batcher's gone, so we can take Batcher's tunnel. We also got a shot of Batcher like on the crashed Moo, so we know that it's still alive. It's almost like we'll come up in this episode. That was one thing I forgot to mention in the first episode. As soon as I saw that, I was like, cool, so we're doing a Resident Evil 4 moment here, where Leon rescues the dog and it comes back to help in the Gigantas fight.
Absolutely.
Months
go by and she's keeping care of it. I can see it.
Well, it was like a couple days, right, between the release and the thingy. But yeah, it wasn't.
Oh, you're right. It wasn't before. Yeah, that's right.
Because they haven't replaced her yet, right? But so they go through there. But as they're trying to get out, Emery realizes what's up because she goes to check on Omega and she's not there. So she tries to stop Omega, and then she basically hits on a silent alarm, so Crosshair stuns her. We do get a really nice moment too, because Crosshair just annihilates the canine droid when they walk in.
Oh my god.
Just brutal. So we see him go from kill to stun. Like, he does the finger flick, and I was like, that's nice. I do appreciate that. Crosshair is like, I'm not gonna kill another clone if I don't have to. So they stun Emery, get out. But the ping went off as we basically, the other thing that's been happening, the B plot is, I was like, is the important guest Tarkin? And then the Moo shuttle opens and there's royal guards. And you're like, oh, it's the Emperor. So yeah, Creamy Sheev comes out and we get that little talk with him and Hemlock and Nalase. And we get the second mention of Project Necromancer, which I'm not a huge fan of that name, but they go through into the vault, and we basically get the lead up that we've been realizing is happening. Is, you know, this is the beginning of the episode 9 plot idea to bring Palpatine back, doing all that stuff again, just trying to set it up so it seems like it wasn't a spur of the moment decision.
It was our boy Ian McDiarmid too, by the way.
Oh yeah,
I was like, so that was, it's really either Sam Witwer has upgraded his voice to be exactly like Ian McDiarmid's, or it's Ian McDiarmid, but it is.
I was curious at first, and the reason I was able to tell is that while Sam Witwer's Palpatine voice is really good, he can only really do, like, at least all the clips that I've seen, he can only really do like three different Palpatine cadences with it.
Yeah, this one is such a low frequency as well. I don't know if he can hit that.
Yeah, because his is usually the more kind of like high pitched,
the
like
younger Palpatine. Evil. Yeah.
Well, yeah, like the clear evil, like cackling Palpatine. And this one was so subdued that after the second time he spoke, I was like, that's probably Ian McDiarmid.
It was. I'm glad you're bringing him in. It's small little cameos, but it's so good.
Palpatine just talks with his like lower division people.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, what else is Ian McDiarmid doing these days? He's only going to be doing this role, probably.
No, I mean, I hope he likes it. But no, I do love how like utterly dismissive Palpatine is about everything. Yeah. The maneuverings that Hemlock is trying to do, as opposed to Vader, who just chokes Krennic as soon as he starts going too far.
Like, I'm just done with this.
Yeah, Palpatine is just like, this is beneath me. we get that little thing with Project Necromancer, and then on the way back, we get the little thing where Hemlock's like, make me the chief science division, or the head of the science Imperial Science Division, and I'll do anything you want. We'll do more Zelo Beast tests. And Palpatine's like, yeah, well, in due time. I'm done with you. I'm leaving. So he takes off. After he's left, Scorch gets the call that they've escaped, so they all run down, realize Emery was stunned, and start the lockdown procedure. So it's a very, like, weird timing, because, like, he's like, oh, shut down the chutes with all these, like, ray shield thingies. And you're like, well, they're already gone by then. No, they're still running out as the ray shields are, like, activating. So they manage to get out in time. They watch Palpatine's shuttle leaving, and kind of just showing how much they're winging the plan. Crosshair's like, cool, where's the shuttle located? And Omega's like, I don't know. And Crosshair goes, let's follow the shuttle.
I love that. Like, that was good tactics.
It's great seeing, like, Crosshair's intelligence just, like, keep coming back. And, yeah, like, being the thing that's really helping. As, you know, in season, the thing I think is the neat, like, little dichotomy there is how little he cared about Omega in season one. And now he's being like, okay.
She didn't,
like,
give up on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, the cool, you went through all this to get me to escape as well. Sure. I've got your back on this. So they make their way to the shuttle. They release the other Lurka hounds to try and stop them, but they run into the beast. Is it named the not a giant monkey gorilla?
Yeah, I don't know what that's called. I'll look in the notes here.
It's the grassy rune bear, didn't you know?
Right? Yes, except it's not as fast, thank God. The speed of those things. The one thing I thought is when they first showed
it, Dryax is what it's called.
Oh, okay. Yep. As long as it's not like a loth gorilla.
No, it's a Dryax.
But I thought it was a Nexu at first, because they showed the eyes, and I was like, oh, cool. So, like, they got, like, Lurka Hounds and Nexu, and then I saw the gorilla, and I was like, oh, okay, it's just...
Yeah, because, like, listen, Padme took him Nexu out with the chain. Like, I don't think they'd be that worried.
That's fair. But what if it's a bigger Nexu? But yeah, so they make their way back to the shuttle. They try and activate the comms, but the comms aren't working. However, turning on the ship basically alerts one of the patrols, because they've sent all the shuttles out with TKs to go and TK is led by a Republic commando. So basically, they see that power surge. They go down to take a look. Crosshair basically asks Omega, were you taught plan, I think it's like 72 74. Or something?
72. It was 72.
Was it?
You're right. Okay. Because the only other plan I remember is Plan 88 from last season.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Omega's like, yeah, Tech made me learn all of them. And Crosshair's like, yeah, of course he did. So they set up Plan 72, which I actually was very impressed with. I thought it was going to be very dumb at first, because the squad moves in and Crosshair opens fire, but his hands are shaking so bad he misses a bunch. He does get some
hits. That's a little bit of foreshadowing from before, because he's like, he's trying to hold it steady. It's like, okay, what's happening here?
Yeah, and so, you know, just the constant force experimentation has taken its toll on him. But yeah, so basically Crosshair is the distraction. And then while he does that, Omega sneaks around back and grabs one of the grapnel cables that they use to deploy, sees Batcher, realizes that, you know, the Lurka Hound's still alive, and then goes up and just pulls like a John Wick light of, I was just like super impressed, but she's been in enough combat situations that it makes sense where she just like goes in immediately, takes the lift up, stuns the trooper, immediately takes control of the ship, and then just turns the guns on the TKs and opens fire. It was super cool. So, like, while that's happening, Crosshair fights the commando that was with the group. There's one moment that I actually started laughing at. I wasn't planning on it, but he takes out the clone commando by slamming his head against the wall.
Yeah.
And then, like, he, like, stands there. Yeah, and the visor goes, like, beesh, and then he gets up. And I was like, are you a droid? What
is, I think what happened that? Is, like, he knocked the guy out. And if there's maybe no vitals in a commando, he, like, not vitals, but if he's, like, sleeping or something, like, maybe the visor just, like, they powered, like, the suit powers down, I guess. I don't know. It was funny.
It was a weird choice, but, like, he could have just fallen forward, or, like, the only other thing I was thinking was, like, he hit him so hard it, like, blew out all
the... It could have hurt the helmet, but, yeah.
But either way, it's kind of funny, but it's such a weird choice to just be like, and now I'm passed out, and just fall down. But yeah, so with him down, and then he takes TK out, too, they both jump into the Moo troop transport with Batcher and take off. Hemlock calls for V-Wings to intercept, but as it looks like they're going to get taken out because the combination of the turbo lasers and V-Wings, they're not able to outrun it. Emery runs in and is like, no, stop, don't open fire, because Hemlock's just like, yeah, fucking kill him, it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah,
he's done with it.
Yeah, and she reveals that the stable M count required for Project Necromancer can be used with Omega's blood. And so Hemlock immediately calls off the pursuit, and Scorch is like very angry about this, where I was like, what did they do to you, man? Where he's like, ah, you're letting them get away. You can't let them escape. You just kill them all. And Hemlock's like, it doesn't matter. I have all the resources of the Empire at my command. This is a minor setback. And yeah, kind of ends with that, basically, of like, we're going to have to go find Omega again. And now the Bad Batch
and the Hound goes with them.
With Tantus.
We have a new doggy.
Yeah, yay. Nobody liked the baby Rancor, so now we're going to have a Lurka Hound. So yeah, I mean, it's neat. I honestly was not expecting Omega and Crosshair to make it out, because I was like, Crosshair's too screwed up by like all the everything that's happened. Omega isn't going, but yeah, they pull it off.
They
really,
wouldn't have made
really
it out
well.
If her DNA was not a match for the M count stuff.
Yeah, right. So now we get the revelation that Omega's force sensitive.
Maybe
it.
I mean, because like she doesn't have midichlorians at this point. But when you add the DNA of whatever the hell person it was, which I'm assuming is Palpatine, right? Because it shows like the blood going in, and it mixes it together. It seems like you're adding the midichlorian count, and then the blood is able to like mix completely with the midichlorians, and like they propagate through that blood fully to replicate what the other M count was from the sample. That's what I got from it. I'm like, okay.
That was the other thing that actually, like, my biggest complaint about all three of these episodes is this theory, because it's like assuming that Omega is force sensitive and has, you know, these special M, because it's the same thing that they're going to set up in Mandalorian of why they need Grogu, right, to get his blood.
Yes,
to
exactly
the M count for Project Necromancer. And I'm like, okay, you had the Inquisitorius, not necessarily right now, but in the interim between this show and Mandalorian, you have the entire Inquisitorius at your command. They have a bunch of Jedi in Amber in their headquarters. You couldn't use any of their midichlorians at any point. You couldn't use Vader's midichlorians at any point.
In those Amber capsule things?
Sure, but then the Inquisitorius, right? You got all of them.
Which is where it's like, does it have to be a Force-sensitive person, or is it just like a DNA sample that needs to be able to be matched with the DNA sample that's being added to it, right?
And if that's the case, it needs to be explained more, right? Because
absolutely,
then it's like,
yeah,
well, Omega and Grogu, right?
Yeah.
We absolutely know they were used for it.
Yeah. Well, do we know that it's Project Necromancer in Mando? Did they say that?
Yeah, because Gideon's the one who's employing, I don't remember his name.
And he says that, though. He says that's the project.
Well, what are they using it for, right?
Well, that's it. We're assuming that that's what it's for, that these are connected, which makes sense to me.
What else is Pesheng working on? He's the Kaminoan clone scientist.
No, I know, but we don't have a... We assumed as soon as we see the clone stuff that that's where it's going, but we don't have a confirmation yet, right?
No one's come out and said it, but when you know, we see Grogu's blood leading to the Gideon clones, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to use the technology for himself, but then was eventually that technology used for Palpatine stuff.
Maybe. At the same time, remember, this is all Empire where everybody thinks that it's not like the Rebellion where everything's disjointed and everything like that, but it is in the sense of, just look at what we're seeing in Andor. People vying for your position and all that kind of stuff, blocking you out. This guy wanted to be chief of science. Hemlock wanted to be chief of science, so like, you know, maybe he's tried to get access to those Jedi things in the Inquisitorius before, and Vader and all of them told him to fuck off. Who are you? You're not getting
these. That's
fair. We also have Hux in the Shadow Council said it's enough time to deliver on the enigmatic Project Necromancer. So he does. Oh, okay. It is the same project. It is the same project. But I guess Gideon's, instead of using it for what everybody wants to use it for, he uses it for himself.
Yeah. Again, because look at the Imperial mindset, right?
But he's almost using it reversed than what it was before, which is maybe why they needed Grogu, because in this instance, potentially, if Omega's not force sensitive but Palpatine is, and they're introducing Palpatine's blood into Omega's blood, right? Then
Snoker.
Not Snoke, but like maybe like you can use that vessel as the vessel for Palpatine, right? Or something of that nature, or like make a clone of that person for that. And then whereas in Mando we have Grogu that's force sensitive and Gideon is not, and they introduce Grogu's blood into Gideon. So it's like, instead of having a creature that's force sensitive that you're introducing the blood to, you're actually taking a force sensitive user's blood and putting it into an on force sensitive user.
Which does nothing for them, because he wasn't all of a sudden doing force pushes. And
well, he wasn't, but his clones may have been able to. We haven't figured that out yet.
The problem at the end of the day is that we don't have enough information on midichlorians, and I don't think we're ever going to have enough information on midichlorians.
No, probably. Well, I mean, there's always time. There's always time into the space for that.
I recoiled inside when they said M count.
Yeah.
So
exactly. Yeah.
I'm just, it's part of Star Wars, man. That's all I'm good for. That's
what
I was
saying. They were trying so hard not to say it, because they knew exactly what they would get if they full out said midichlorians. We were up in arms and everything.
Because Palpatine's M thing...
count close enough where we can still cringe. We just can't be like, no, it's their mana pool. What do you mean? No.
Is Palpatine's Legends rebirth? That is him possessing another person, and then he gets rebirthed again.
Nope, that's him creating clones of himself. That
is M count ever said in that?
It's a transfer. It's an
essence transfer. So right?
It's essence transfer that Darth Bane started.
But it was like a normal clone, so like they just cloned him normally, and then he just jumped into it.
In Legends, so in Legends, how it worked was that the Jedi had Force ghosts. The Sith version was Force possession.
Okay.
So it was just
like artifacts or people or whatever the fuck you want to do.
Kind of like the Momen stuff, but it was literally just like on death, I can just eject my spirit and forcibly take over yours. But Palpatine tried that with normal people. The body lasted like a week.
Yes, so he needed his own.
Then on Biss, he ended up making the force sensitive clones to then take them over, and because there was no soul in them already.
How did he make force sensitive clones? Did he get into that?
They just said they could. Yeah.
Okay, so we're getting into the nitty gritty of it now, essentially. Okay.
No, it's never brought up. Like, okay. it's
never dived into in the books.
When Luke is made, he just has all the powers of Luke.
Cool.
But he didn't go through the training. I was like, well, Joris just yelled at him a bunch.
He really is on the level of somehow he returned.
Okay.
At some point too, like,
so it's like hand wavy. In this instance, it's like, we're gonna get into the nitty gritty.
Well, we're gonna dance around the nitty gritty.
Yeah. And maybe we'll dive into it. Maybe. I doubt it, but maybe.
Yeah. For story purposes, of course.
Yeah.
The more you explain it, the less the more holes are in the story, I think.
Always.
Right? Because the more you dive into an explanation, if someone's like, but in this instance it doesn't do that.
And so that's the unfortunate thing that I was thinking was like, at the end of the day, everybody already knows that you just were making stuff up for
the whole thing's made up.
9. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
It wasn't planned out. Like,
the stories weren't connected.
Yeah. As opposed to, and I'll always sing its praises from the rooftops because it's done it so well, One Piece, where every time there's a plot twist or a Deus Ex or a, something that gets them out, it makes sense why it's done.
Yeah.
There is a single thing in the last, 5 years that I think you might be able to argue was not set up enough, right? And that's the whole, what Gear 5 actually is. But at the same time, he is at that point. If you don't know One Piece, you're going to have no idea what I'm talking about, so I apologize.
We all know.
Yeah, but at the same time, we have...
Pause here. Go read all of One Piece and then come back.
Go read 1,000 chapters.
You're making a reference, Noma. I'm just helping them out.
It's true. What's the big deal? Why they can do it. They should do it.
We'll be here in about 5 months when you come back. Yeah.
But as I was explaining to a friend, because I was talking about this with him earlier this week, ironically, it's like the setup is that, so it turns out to be human model legendary mode Nika, which is like, oh, that's a bit of a pull. And it's like, okay, well, he's fighting fish, fruit, model type dragon. Mythical sea snake dragon. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so like you can't be super specific and go about, oh, but like it's a bunch of sea snakes. No, there's only one, and then they made another one because some crazy guy on a science island was like, I think I can do this. Oops, it's a failure. This one's pink.
Yeah, I love that. That makes me so happy.
We have two. Right. It's Egghead's a whole other thing, but man, it's right now it's really fighting for, in my head, it's fighting for number one arc with the Impel or Enies Lobby. Right.
Egghead?
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay.
Egghead and Enies Lobby, right. I can't I can't say until Egghead's done, but it's really hard for me to pick which one I like.
There's some good shit happening in this arc. Anyway, back to Star Wars.
Anyways, yeah. But so that's my point, is like, you can, like, even if you're super immersed in Star Wars, and I'm sure there are some people who can suspend themselves more than I can, but you can tell that this is a bunch of things that are trying to patch and legitimize something that was made up kind of like without consulting and, you know, taking in the rest of the Star Wars mythos that you had around you, right? It was just, let's bring Palpatine back because the other bad guy's been axed. And on one hand, I understand that you want to save all the effort that you put into these things. But on the other, you know, and I hate to quote episode 8, just let the past die. Like, just let it, you know. Just, everyone understands you made a mistake and you shouldn't have tackled it the way you did, but
we're dealing with what we got.
What's done was done, you know. And on one hand, I get that it's not necessarily the people who are creating Bad Batch who are trying to make this work. It's the people at the top screaming that, you know, we can't be wrong. But it is just a little thing that's needling me throughout some of these things, because it brings up all these questions. And if they're answered properly, then that's fine. It just means I'm not going to judge Bad Batch under the same lens as episode 9. Which I don't right now, so
yeah, I don't think
it just continues.
Like, there's some things that pop up where you're like, oh yeah, okay, episode 9, all this stuff, and then there are other times where like the connection's really strong. You're like, well, do we want to read Shadows of the Sith? Probably not.
Yeah, so, well, I tried.
Yeah, you guys did not. That's the first book you guys have not gotten through. I plowed my way through that book.
I do not regret.
I was like,
it.
Is there anything in this book that is worth the salt? That is like worth the paper it's printed on and the ink that was used?
Ochi's death.
That. And Luke and Lando being together and having fun. That's it.
Fair. Yeah, that's because it, man. I've legit, just for my own enjoyment, I've been going through the Vader 2020 series. I was telling Noma this the other week. And I told him, I was like, you're not going to enjoy this because if you do read it, you won't. Oshi is in almost every chapter after chapter like 3. He's been in every single one.
It's okay. And he leaves very quickly. As much as he quickly appears, he does leave and it doesn't come back.
But then he has to tell you who he is.
Yeah,
every
Ochi
time.
Of Bastoon.
Constantly.
I think Vader's like, I don't give a shit who you are.
Basically.
Yeah.
But like he just kind of stops responding to him after all, and he just tosses him either out of the ship or he's just like, go do this thing, assassin. I'm not calling you your name.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I love how Vader treats him. It's just like, go fuck yourself. I don't care.
Yeah,
just
basically.
Go do your job.
And anybody he runs into, he's just like, well, oh, you're helping us all the time. I'm Ochi Bastoon. I can do what I want. It's like, shut the fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Up. He's like, do you know who I am? Do you know who you're speaking to? It's like, yeah, the guy who's going to die in a sandy hole.
Literally, yeah. Nobody knows you. Nobody cares. You're supposed to be assassins. So it's like, he's like Archer. You should not be telling people you're a secret agent.
Yeah.
But yet, you want everybody to know who you are. It's like,
if you love Ochi of Bastoon, let us know. I want to know why. I want to know why. If you're a listener and you absolutely cannot get enough of Ochi of Bastoon, please tell me why. Because I don't understand why this character exists and why he won't die in material that has already been released.
He's there for Funko Pops and Black Series. That's it.
Man, just for more Funko.
Merchandising.
Oh, man. Any other last points for this episode? I think we did pretty good. Like, these three episodes were solid. Introduction to season 3. They get us on the right track. We're in it from the beginning. There's no beating around the bush.
I'm just happy Omega has a dog now.
Me too. I'm super happy about the Lurker Hound. But I think having a Lurker Hound and Crosshair and Omega back on the crew, that's
some cool shit. They're trying to make it 5 again, right?
Maybe. We'll get them on the crew.
So that's the thing. I'm curious if next episode they are actually going to reunite or they're going to miss each other.
I think they're going to miss each other.
Yeah.
I have a feeling. I don't know if they're going to find Tantus that quickly, but I think they're still going to miss each other. And I think there's got to be some sort of comm problem. Like, they can't use the comms because it's going to
damage the answer.
Well, like, it might be damaged, or it could be that, you know, it's going to send signal back to Tantus or like the Empire, right? Because it's an Imperial ship, right? I'm assuming there's trackers on it somewhere.
You guys are too optimistic. Let me tell you how this is going to go.
They're going to shot down. So, everyone dies.
Well, no. So Wrecker and Hunter are still going to be looking around, trying to find ways and clues to get there. They'll intercept some communication, being just like, you know, why are all the bounty hunters all of a sudden looking for Omega? All of a sudden, all Imperial assets are looking at this. Why looking for Omega or something like that? Because, like Hemlock says, he has access to all the resources now, right? While doing that, Crosshair, Omega, and can't remember the dog's name already.
Batcher
are gonna go to like the old haunts and try to find them. Yeah, basically. But as soon as they land, Crosshair is gonna have this moment where he pulls his old song and like, I'm gonna go try and survive by myself. You can do whatever you want. And I'll have to spend the whole episode convincing him to come with her to keep looking for her because it's not over yet. They can find their brothers. They have to look for them. They have to keep looking. All right, you've convinced me, kid. Let's keep going. And then that'll be episode 4. And then episode 5 will then be, okay, we found the place we think they're at, but there's something up. So we're going to sneak along and pretend that we're mercenaries and bounty hunters and figure out who we're going for. And, oh, Omega's left. Okay, well, now we got to find out. And we're going to call Pabu and tell them to go start sending their people to look for her too. And then Rex and Echo will show up and be like, we'll help you find Omega. and the near to the end of the season is where they'll actually meet up. And then Crosshair will be there. And they'll probably want to be like, fisticuffs with you, but not really, because we're glad we have our brother back. No, but I'm traumatized because I was tortured like crazy. So I can't be Crosshair anymore because I can't aim. So I'm going to stay on Pabu now. Okay, I guess we're all gonna stay on Pabu because we don't leave our brothers behind. Boom, that's the whole season there. I'm telling you right now,
isn't this the last season?
It is the last season,
the final season.
Do we know how many episodes it is?
18 or 15? I have to double check. Give me a second.
Because my thought was that the mid-season finale is 15 episodes meeting up.
Yeah.
And then my thought is that the end of the season is going to be them assaulting Tantus to try and take out Hemlock for the fact that they're never going to stop chasing Omega unless he's dead.
Yeah, we're 15 episodes for this season.
Okay.
So we're already a fifth of the way done.
I could definitely see what you're saying, Ed, as well. And then, like, it denouements down to, like, we all got screwed up from the Tantus mission, so we'll retire on Pabu and Omega. Mm-hmm. Now it's your turn to...
They don't
have to be the baddest batch.
They don't have to kill Hemlock because you want my denouement for the season. Okay, so they'll get away, they'll escape, and we see Rex in later stuff, but we don't see the rest of them because they have to stay somewhere where it's like Tantalor. The Empire will never find them, right? So in failing to get Omega back because they have failed, what does the Empire do to people who failed? Oh, Vader's going to show up at Tantus and be like, the Emperor says you have failed. My man.
I hope those Break hounds get released on him like Ramsay Bolton.
And then that's what I hope happens to him. Will be like, the Kaminoans will not see this failure anymore, and they'll bring in their own people, even more of them now, but like
a Werner whole Herzog division. 1.0.
Just one. But that's where we might get the connection between Werner. They might even bring in...
Is Werner?
Pershing might come in as well and everything like that. And they'll be like, okay, we're going to continue forward with just our own people.
Well, Pershing is too young, I think, isn't he?
It's hard to say. If he's in his 30s, they could bring him
in. It's possible, yeah. But he'd be, if he's in his... Yeah.
It's hard, yeah.
But at least... Sure. What I'm saying is basically to set up the premise of him having anything to do with the project.
I think Pershing's going to be just brought in for sure somewhere.
Because we were just talking about, you know, in Mandalorian what happens, and they mentioned the project and everything like that. So it's still going up until that point. So,
right.
Like, progress is fucking slow. Well, this was supposed to speed up progress. What happened? They had the one sample, couldn't get any more, so couldn't continue the stuff. It's a failure. Got to go looking for other avenues. Well, like we were saying before, why don't they just use the Jedi stuff and everything from there? Because the Inquisitorius don't want you touching around their stuff. Well, now they'll be involved in it, and they'll do it their way, and they'll hit another snag, and it'll just continue and continue and continue.
So based off that, I think Nala Se has to die this season.
Yes, absolutely, she will be.
To stymie the process. I would not be surprised if Nala Se dies and Emery defects.
I would not be surprised at that, too, because she's definitely coming up for, like, a heel turn a little bit in a good way.
Like, this is the end of the
Kaminoans. Lamasu's already dead, isn't he?
Yes. He was killed by...
Season 2. I thought.
Fennec? Was it Fennec that killed him, or somebody did?
I don't think Fennec kills him.
What's his name again? Lamassu?
Lamassu.
Yeah. I'll find out.
I'm pretty sure he's killed in season two.
Pretty sure he did. That's why
Amalase is the only one who's left. But yeah, I mean, you have to get resolved.
Yeah, that's why she tried to run, right? And then he died, and she's like, oh no.
Something like that, I think. But yeah, so you need to get Nalasea out because she's basically the one who's actually keeping this progress going. Mm. And then Emery, because we're, like Dan said, we're doing the heel turn now to
follow,
good guy.
Following their meeting, Hemlock used the information he had gathered from Lamassu to capture that. 1 second. Lamassu, however, retorted that it must be frustrating for Hemlock to possess the resources, but not expertise. In exchange for his freedom, Lamassu revealed the only asset that could be motivate Malise. So he's free. He's alive.
Oh, is he?
He traded the information for the one piece of information that would help Malise actually do the work, and that was Omega. And then I guess he got to leave. I thought they were going to just kill him.
Yeah, I could have sworn he was dead.
Well, there you go. Ed was right.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be hilarious if Lamassu repicks up the stuff.
I don't think he has the expertice for it. He's a prime minister.
He wasn't a scientist. He was a politician. So
anyway, all right. Any last points? No. All right. Let's get into the outro. Welcome to the outro of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And before we get into how you can contact us and all that, we actually have a voicemail from a listener. RFB has sent us something. So, boys, if you want to pull up the recording on the drive, you can listen to it through that. And then we can hear what he says.
Voice of the Empire. Voice of the Force, boys. It's RFB, just fresh out of the medieval game stream chat from this Saturday afternoon. And talking Bad Batch. First three episodes of the final season, 3. Just had some thoughts. A few weeks back, podcast friends Rule the Galaxy had a fun little chat with Nika Futterman, we know as Asajj Ventress. Yeah, they had a 90-minute chat with her, which, of course, she couldn't go and speak to what's coming, what we're going to be told over these next 10 weeks. But what she did say, Star Wars Meg even got a hold of this, which surprised me because she doesn't really pay much attention to audio. Fortunately, the RTG boys did that as a live stream on their YouTube channel, where she did say that Bad Batch is sort of an appetizer of sorts where it concerns Asajj Ventress. So maybe this season winds up on May 1st, so May 4th turns up as a Saturday. Hopefully there's an announcement of something new next animation for Star Wars. We'll see. Quick thoughts. I know there's quite a bit through the first three episodes. It turns up that, no, I do not believe that Omega is Force sensitive, but indeed she is a carrier. So something about her DNA makes her not just Omega, the end of the line where Boba is the alpha beginning of the line, but there's something special about her that kind of feel fearful of how things might turn up. And no, I don't think that Lucasfilm's has introduced to us this little girl that they're going to go and do away with her. I don't see that. Not how Lucasfilm tells Star Wars stories, but very interesting. Do Etienne's 3 also maybe take her the same way? She's a carrier of high midichlorians counts that can be of use to Palpatine. So looking forward to your thoughts. Come keep me company on my work day. Word home. And on to the next. See you in the next stream chat, boys. Long live the Empire.
So I'd completely forgotten the whole Asajj Ventress thing.
Me too.
I was going to say the same. Oh, wow, all three of us. Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah.
When I said Asajj Ventress, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was in the trailer. I forgot about that. And we talked about that before, so.
Yeah, because I didn't watch the trailer, but we had talked about it, and I was just like, damn, right. To me, in my head, still non-applicable.
It must have been like for you, Ed. It was just like, yeah, they had an interview with Asajj Ventress about the Bad Batch season 3, and you're like, what the fuck is he talking about? Why her?
I was like, oh, that's neat. I wonder why. Yeah, and then...
Well, I knew, because just based off what everybody else was saying, I knew she was in the season. Yeah. I just completely forgot it. So, yeah.
That's so funny.
So they're not going to meet up with Echo and they're going to meet up with Asajj. And then be like, how the fuck are you here? Oh, okay.
So to RFB's other point, the one thing that I think is a hint that Omega is force sensitive. There is one other thing, but it's kind of weak, which is that, like, what else would a high midichlorian count mean? But you know, that can go either way. But the one thing that I feel like is just her interactions with Batcher. It reminds me a lot of Ezra's, you know, main ability of communicating with animals.
Yeah.
And this is just a very untrained version of that. So that's why I'm leaning more towards, you know, Omega is force sensitive, but it could be either. I also agree. They're not going to kill Omega. Like, they're not, it's not.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to kill Omega either.
There's absolutely 0% chance they do that. Like, the only way they would do that is if the minds of, Dan and David, D&D, possess Dave Filoni and are like, do a Game of Thrones season 8.
Yeah, well, he's not involved in this.
All at once.
As far as we
Dave
know.
Dave Filoni's not?
He might be an executive producer, but he's not like involved in the show creation.
Creative director, right?
He is for Lucasfilm, so yeah, that would probably be the involvement he has then, yeah. Like executive producer, that kind of thing.
Unless something got into someone's head and it's like, we need to destroy Bad Batch the same way Game of Thrones fell to pieces.
I getcha.
Otherwise it's not happening. There's no way.
I mean, these are pretty solid storylines. Like, I'm really excited that these people that are working on this have the ability to tell these stories in an interesting way. I mean, there's definitely some growing pains, right? And we've experienced them in the previous seasons, but this one seems so far to be starting off very strong.
Oh yeah, like I said, you know, as much as I enjoyed the Sereno stuff in the first episode of season 2, season 3's first 3 episodes are so much better.
Yeah,
it's not even close.
I did want to say thank you, RFB, for sending in voicemail. It's been a little bit, but we appreciate you sending them in. And if anybody else wants to do that, we'll tell you how you can do that very shortly.
Well, also, before that, I feel like I cut you off there, Ed. Was there anything else that you had to say there?
Oh, not really. It was just like, from the Ventress stuff aside, just to see if this is indeed just a, as you said, teaser for her at this point.
Yeah, maybe like an Asajj Ventress show, potentially. Like, or Underworld show, maybe.
Well, it's... Again, this out-of-order stuff is just like, you ask... There must be a reason for it, I'd like to think. There could very well be no reason for it, and just, shock value and more toys. But it's just like... If she's not even in it to be a full part of it, kind of like how you were talking about the treasure hunter and how she was in and she helped them find Pabu, pretty much. It was just like, so Ventress is going to have a purpose, right? Rather than just like kind of phasming it being there. Mm. Like, we see these characters who are one-offs get stories afterwards.
Yeah.
The thing is, Asajj had a whole series. And then, you know, from that series, a book.
And that book was a very great end to that character.
And so, like, to just drop her in as a, hey, hi,
and they said they're going to marry it up with Dark Disciple somehow.
Yeah.
So, it'd be interesting to see where they go with her, honestly.
That whole phrase, they'll merge them up, I don't understand. It's not Dark Disciple.
It doesn't make sense in our heads. I can absolutely understand that.
I full on cannot wrap my head around, but like, the timing is way off.
Yeah,
everything's way off. So
at least a few
the
years.
The only way it quote unquote ties in is this is the after events.
Maybe it's a flashback somehow. It could be.
They're going to do like a Boba Fett with the sand people?
I mean, Boba Fett had a connection to Asajj for a little bit, so I don't know if she ever came back to it or
pool
something.
And she befriended the zombies, and then...
I mean, that's a possibility of how to bring a character back without actually messing with the timeline.
I mean, so I've been trying not to think about it and just be like, look, well, I'll get there when I get there.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're going to have to do.
It'll be what it'll be. But, like, I mean, it's not a stretch to be like, and then she just woke up in the pool and it took her, like, 3 years to heal. It's not great, but...
could happen.
You know, it's just like, and she woke up and then she looked around and realized that everyone on Dathomir is still dead because she missed Meryn.
That's right. Unless she's going to be, like...
yeah, she was on the other side of the planet. That's, she was on the South Pole.
Right. Because something to explain, like, you know, what, now that you're back, are you even more powerful than before? Do you have a better aspect? Can you grasp both the light and the dark now? Yeah. Like,
is the question you're asking, are Rakatan's Saiyans?
Oh, you mean Rat Attack? No, more like, is Asajj Ventress now Revan?
Yeah,
basically.
Or like the person. Yeah, that can use both light and dark without actually being corrupted by the dark side.
I was Sith. I am Jedi. I know both. Yeah.
Yeah. That would actually be really kind of funny, because she did go Jedi, Sith, Jedi. So, yeah, it is basically the same thing, except there were no Mandalorians. And, well, she didn't care about the Mandalorian in her story.
Yeah, she might be able to pull off the Vader that Vader wasn't able to pull off. He didn't have enough time in his life.
I think
Jedi, Sith, Jedi, you know, all that stuff.
He force ghosts after.
That's why we say Revan.
Yeah.
But it's all very interesting because there's so many questions that come up. The biggest ones, of course, like how and what are you doing?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, let's run with it. Let's say you do a new series of whatever. What could you possibly be doing? Like, Ahsoka's around, so unless you're helping Ahsoka with Fulcrum stuff, just being another agent kind of thing like that can work on their own in the shadow, whatever it is, basically an ARC trooper.
Yeah.
Like,
it could just be, like, Star Wars Underworld. Like, seeing Crimson Dawn stuff.
So are you the one, like, fighting Crimson Dawn people from the shadow? Are you the one, like, do you run into Ochi of Mist Doom? Do you run into, like... the Pike Syndicate and try to completely eradicate them.
But that would be neat because I mean, Asajj did really seem to enjoy her bounty hunter life.
That's what I mean, though. Like, that's a very easy transition back into that. Yeah,
it'd be interesting. Hey, Omega, want to see the galaxy? Don't look at Boba too hard.
Yeah,
just don't think about it. It'd be interesting.
I think Asajj Ventress is such a beloved character. I mean, at least to me. I don't know about the whole fandom, but I really enjoyed her character and the Dark Disciple book. It was one of the first books in canon, like when it was coming out, it was near the beginning of it. And I remember reading it and I was just like, I was in tears a little bit. I'm like, oh my God, this book is good. This book is like, this is what books need to be. And then we get stuff like Shadow of the Sith and we're like, oh shit, okay.
So, off what you, Ed was saying as well, though, because this just popped into my head where, you know, it'd be interesting, or if they do that bounty hunter, like, get-together kind of thing, and then kind of showing that, like, taking it to the criminal gangs, it would be interesting if it's, like, it's the same gang that Asajj Ventress worked with, and then we get to see how Aurra Sing actually died.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, bring in Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, what's his name? Yeah, what's the character's name? I legitimately can't remember.
which
Woody Harrelson's character, Woody his Harrelson name is...
Solo.
I just watched it again. I just watched the movie.
I legitimately only remember Kira and Dryden Voss.
Oh my God, why is it not happening?
And that's it.
Who's in charge here? You are, sir.
His name is, I got it right here, Tobias Beckett.
Beckett.
Yeah, Beckett, that's right. Yeah. So that would be interesting.
There's also a comic that, like a one-shot comic with him in it. But...
Okay. Well, could be a neat opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, RFB. Any last thoughts for RFB's comments?
Oh. Man, I'm super impressed that he got that recording in, like, within the 2 hours it's been.
Yeah, since, he's like, you're recording tonight, Bad Batch? Yes, sending it now, yeah. appreciate it, RFB. But I was just going to say, I hope, May 4th, I hope we do get a little bit of an announcement for, like, live action series, or not live action, animated series, because this is the end of the animation, as far as we know, for now, until Tales of the Jedi, which hasn't, I don't think, fully been confirmed as a release date yet or anything like that. But I think they said they were going to do a season 2, so.
Vision season 3, Star Wars What If.
I'm sure, yeah. There's different teams working on this Vision stuff, too. So that is definitely going to be happening sometime, hopefully. Anyway, Ed, any last thoughts?
Nope, got my stuff out. That was pretty much it.
This is the part of the podcast where Ed is going to tell you how you can send in a voicemail or send us an email or connect with us in many different ways. Ed?
So this information you can find on our website, voiceoftheforce.com. You can also find it in the show notes of this episode for whatever platform you are listening to us on. If you want to contact us and send us something by email, that is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. Send it to that address. We'll hear everything you got to say. On social media, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. We are at VoiceForcePod on all three. So anything you repost, retweet that we post, or find and retweet from other podcasters, or just general things we see on the interwebs there, it helps growing our listener base and is very much appreciated. So please continue to do so. You can listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. If you do review us with 5 stars and a comment, it does help with visibility. And once again, we really do appreciate it. And that way your friends can find us that much easier when you tell them about us. You can subscribe for free for the latest episode information as soon as it releases. And like Noma said, we are plugging our Twitch channel in here. We are twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming. We stream Tuesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Please, please tune in to our Instagram and Twitter for when we are going to do our streams and stream times. And check out some of our past videos that should still be up on our Twitch channel. You will have a great time. I intend to do that after we record.
Absolutely. And remember, Asajj lives. Instead of Ahsoka lives. I had to do it. Instead of that, or remember, you can't have personal belongings. We talked about this.
I like that one.
That's pretty good, too.